Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Slash Filmcast After Dark, the after show for the Slash Filmcast, where we discuss a variety of random topics that didn't make it into the show. If you're listening to this right now, it's because you're a patron over at patreon.com/filmpodcast. Thanks so much for being a patron, for supporting the show. It means a great deal. I'm David Chen, and joining me for the After Dark this week is Devinder Hardawar and also Danish Syed. Danish, thanks for sticking around.
Absolutely.
So here's what we got on tap for today's After Dark. We're going to start by answering a few more mailbag questions on the Patreon mailbag. I made this post a few weeks ago, asked for some questions, and everyone responded with some really interesting questions. And then we're going to dive into a review of The Falcon and Winter Soldier Season 1. So let's start with a few questions. Here we go. Okay. Eduardo Morales has a very controversial one, all right? Mm-hmm. Who do you think will have a more lauded filmography when it's all said and done? Christopher Nolan or Denis Villeneuve?
I think
lauded by who?
Yeah.
That's a question.
I think Christopher Nolan.
By you. Yeah.
Oh, but by like each of us individually?
I guess the question is about like who society considers it, right? But like I think only answer what we will consider the better filmography, right?
Well, I'll say both. I think society will unjustly pick Nolan over Villeneuve.
What? Okay.
But I personally think Villeneuve will have the better filmography.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Can you talk a little bit more about why that's the case?
Well, I think there's no denying that Nolan will have more of a cultural impact because of Dark Knight and Inception. I just think that's not. I don't think they're going to top that. But if you look at a movie for movie, Villeneuve is like batting 1,000, and Nolan has made some movies that are not as good as other movies. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I could see that.
Yeah. I guess I feel like Denis Villeneuve's movies are more like low-key, right?
They are.
Even his successful movies are like, there's rarely like a wow moment, right? It's, I think of movies like Arrival and Prisoners, right? Sure. These movies feel to me like slow burn movies, right? And certainly Enemy, right? The 2014 thriller with Jake Gyllenhaal. Mm-hmm. I love all these movies, right? But I think you're right that Christopher Nolan's cultural impact will be bigger.
Yes.
Because of movies like Dark Knight and Inception.
He makes big pop culture, you know.
But not only that, I feel like he is actually like Denis Villeneuve is making really excellent versions of those films, right? Like he's making a really excellent thriller in Prisoners. He's making a really excellent psychological drama in Enemy. He's making a really excellent sci-fi film with Arrival and Blade Runner 2049. I feel like Nolan is pushing the boundaries of the medium, though, right? Like, sure. He's making movies unlike or that are so, you know, daring in terms of their construction that they're like unlike what they're almost like a different category than what we've seen
before. I feel that about Nolan, too. And I think it's just like the difference between like classical filmmaking and then people who are push like the you know the youngins who are really pushing things forward in different ways, and we see this change all the time, even though they're basically the same age group, right, in the same cohort. But I think for me it'll probably be Villeneuve too, and it feels weird to say that because I didn't like Prisoners very much. I thought a lot of Prisoners didn't ever really work for me very well as a thriller because some of it just felt super laughable. But then I got really into everything Villeneuve has done since then. I saw Incendies, Enemy, Sicario. Like, some of these movies feel almost impossible to make in a way. Like, Arrival is adapting, you know, a short, and has a good script too, but that's the adaptation of a short story that it seems like it's really difficult to turn that into a film.
Right.
Having a sequel to Blade Runner that is actually great, and I argue in many ways better than the original, feels impossible. You know, he is taking on these insane challenges. Dune, I'm really looking forward to Dune because, again, something that a lot of people consider unfilmable. Nolan definitely works in big ideas, and I really appreciate that, too. I think overall, though, I'm still like left more, you know, deeply impacted by what Villeneuve does.
I would also say that Nolan's best movies are his most classical movies.
Yes.
I think his best movie is The Prestige. And that's a movie I could see Villeneuve making, you know?
Mm-hmm. Even The Prestige, though, has a really fascinating, like, diary within a diary flashback, you know, construction. The beginning is at the end and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Let's just be clear about classical filmmaking, though. Like, in terms of Nolan's visual style, it is, in fact, very classical. Like, there's he uses almost all, like, sort of mid-length lenses, right? Like, he rarely uses, like, ultra close-up or ultra-wide.
He's one of the few guys still on film, like, only film.
Right, he's using film. It's all very, the angles are all fairly conventional. The fascinating thing about Nolan is that what makes his work pushing of the medium is not the visual style. It is the structure of the storytelling, right? Like, that is what makes his work innovative. It's not like he's using Dutch angles in a whole new way. He's not doing that. All of his stuff is very, very conventionally shot. But it's a lot of it's done practically, and obviously the ambition of the set pieces is high, but it's how the stories are told and edited and structured that is interesting. Mm-hmm. So for me, it's gonna be Nolan. It's gonna be Nolan. I know it sounds like for you guys it's Villeneuve. I'm going to say Nolan just because Nolan, when I watch Villeneuve movies, I'm like, this guy is really, really good. He's really good at telling these kinds of stories. And then when I watch Nolan movies, I'm like, this guy is expanding my definition of what cinema is, what it can do. So that's kind of why I got to go with Nolan. But I respect your choices. Love all of Denis's movies as well. So
I have a pet theory that probably will collapse under any scrutiny. But is that most movies and filmmakers fall into two categories, either Alien or Aliens.
Ooh.
And so I would say that Villeneuve is Alien and Nolan is Aliens.
Yeah. That's pretty good. That's pretty good. Mm. Yeah.
Okay. All right. here is a question from Chris White, who posts on patreon.com/filmpodcast. Especially while quarantining this past year, my wife and I have instituted a background show, essentially a familiar show we have seen hundreds of times just to fill a silence.
Love it. Love it.
This show has been friends for the past several months, but I'm trying to transition us to The Simpsons with some resistance. The question would be, do any of you have background shows or suggestions for shows that would be good to try out?
Well, as you guys mentioned last time, the show superior to Friends, Seinfeld. That's literally my background show. I watch it all the time.
Great Seinfeld, background show.
Always great background show. We've talked about this, like, it's a topic before, but for me, it has always been Frasier. But Seinfeld is up there too. Like, it's really any long running comedy series. I feel like Community is good, but also too dangerous because you get too engrossed in it. You know, it's like you want something that could just, like, be there in the background.
Right. You want something that is not too mentally taxing.
Exactly. Right? And Seinfeld can be that, but I've seen it so many times where it's like it doesn't really do that. My Community rewatches are not that high yet, so I still get into how good that show is sometimes. But yeah, light
maybe
show.
Curb.
I don't know. Sure. Yeah.
Maybe. I don't know.
I would say Simpsons is a great background show.
Yes.
Because just like on a moment by moment basis, there's just so many great gags, you know? So yeah.
I would say Schitt's Creek.
Sure.
I have not watched a single episode of that yet, and I'm planning on it.
I am shocked by this.
It's on my to-do list.
Absolutely shocked. But I have to say a background show is probably one that you've seen already, right? Because if you're watching something for the first time, then you're like,
you don't want to be a background show. Right,
yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, so.
I think that I agree with that, but sometimes I am looking for something that it's that really narrow thing where it's like, it's something I haven't seen before, but that's something I don't want to get too invested in.
Sure.
And so, I don't know.
I watch a lot of Netflix shows like that too. It's just like I'm doing other things, but I am half invested in whatever is happening in this.
That's how I watched the Oscars last night, which is maybe why I enjoyed it more than you guys.
All right, guys. Thanks for all of your questions over at patreon.com/filmpodcast. Why don't we dive into some Falcon and Winter Soldier? So we're going to spoil everything through season one of Falcon and Winter Soldier. All right, Devendra, you were pretty positive on it when we talked about it after the first episode. Curious if your opinion held throughout the whole show.
This was 6 episodes, and boy, what a journey it has been. I think the show started out really strong, to be honest. And as we talked about, I think it was delving into a lot of different aspects of the MCU that we never really got to see. Like who gets paid? How do these people survive on a day-to-day basis? And how does race actually play into the way somebody like the Falcon lives and survives? I thought all that was really interesting. And then the show just kind of veers. It just feels like a mess at a certain point. It feels like, and I heard like they had to rewrite the show at a certain point too, like right. based on the pandemic and what they could actually shoot. We get the introduction to the replacement, you know, the replacement Captain America, which I think is really interesting too, because it's freaking Wyatt Russell, who I really enjoy as an actor. And this is a new thing for him because I mostly know him from like, was it Lodge 49 or that show where he is just like a stoner dude, you know,
he's
like
awesome in Overlord.
Awesome as Overlord, yeah. but he's more actiony too. I like him. I like seeing him in things. So like he is really an interesting element in this, like as somebody chosen to be Captain America. We kind of know where the story is going to go, but I do feel like the entire middle of the series just doesn't really go anywhere. It feels really confused at times. It feels like we've spent two or three episodes where it just like we just kind of set a plot. We don't really learn much more about these characters. I like the villain. I like the villain, Carly Morgenthau, who just feels like she just looks like a normal, you know, a normal woman, normal young woman who has superpowers. I feel like there's a lot to do there. Again, like she is also like, I believe she is Jamaican. She's Jamaican and like British too. So like she is a really interesting representation of the world and sort of like the message that the early episodes kind of get into. But I don't think the show is as smart as I wanted it to be. I'm glad like the goat Carl Lumbly appears.
Yes.
To kind of really Mantis himself appears. Injecting some pathos into the series because he really gets on like the stuff that is interesting to me, like the super soldiers who were forgotten, who the government basically abused and tortured. And then when they came back, like they had nothing. So I almost wish they had dived more into that stuff. I didn't care much about the Zemo, like I bringing Zemo back, breaking him out of jail. So much of this stuff, we spent an entire movie trying to get this guy in jail. And it's just like
not only do they break him out of jail, but they are cool with him just straight up murdering dudes.
They're like, cool with him.
He murders that scientist guy, and they're just like, you know, you better not do that again, Zemo. You know, that's their reaction.
Oh, Zemo, you scamp.
Yeah, you're so he's incorrigible. He's so such a silly goose, Zemo.
Man. I feel like that is
now
the point.
Let's play the gif of him dancing.
That's the point where the show kind of lost me. It's like, what are you doing with this guy? And actually, I like Zemo as a villain because I think he was a really smart villain who won. You know, he won in Civil War, right? So there's just so much that doesn't quite work. Like, whatever they do with the new Captain America, his whole redemption, and we'll talk about that as U.S. agent, like, it felt very weird to me. Like, he performed a war crime in public. And by the end of the series, you know, which was recorded on many phones.
Captain America.
Yeah. He is rewarded with a like a Black Ops label and superpowers. Like, he just took the superpowers he wasn't supposed to. No punishment or anything, really.
Let's not even address it. Don't even refer back to it. It's no problem.
It feels like an absolute mess.
Let me tell you, Devendra.
Danish, I want to hear what you have to say, but let me just tell you, Devendra, we disagree on a lot of things on this podcast, and it makes for in general, it makes for good podcasting. But every now and then, and again, dude, it is just so nice when we actually agree on something.
Yes. Yeah.
It just is like a glass of cold water in the desert. It's like, oh man, it's so nice to actually agree with Devendra on something. Okay. Anyway, yeah. Danish, go ahead. Your thoughts.
I'm kind of there with you. I will say I was higher on the show throughout most of it more than you guys were. Like, Dave, I was watching your episode by episode recaps, and I was definitely more positive than you as we were watching it, but it did lose me halfway through. And I think that episode 5 is awesome. Like, almost completely, the whole episode works really well, because it's like you said, it deals with Carl Lumbly, which I think is the best character and the best storyline, and the whole show should have been about that. It's juggling too many things. Also, the Carly villain, I kind of agree, it's actually a lot like the main villain of the Miles Morales video game. It's like
almost exactly.
And it's the classic thing of like, I agree with what you're doing, but not how you're doing it, you know, like we've seen that a lot. The problem is they didn't set up her thing. Like, What was she doing? Like, I didn't really get the Flag Smashers that much.
Explain her plan. You know, no one can explain what her plan is, because it's very vague.
We know what she's mad about, but we don't know what she's trying to do. Yeah.
Yeah. She's right. kidnapping the GRC people to stop them from making a vote so that fill
so that
the
people
blank.
Don't get relocated.
So that people don't get. And then what is the plan after that? You know, like. Sorry, go ahead.
I think the thing that broke me, by the way, is also what this show does to Sharon Carter, who's a character.
Oh my God. I've flushed that character down the toilet. You know,
I've really been interested in what they're going to do with her. She is played, forget the actor's name, but like she is an interesting actor because she was like the lead in Revenge, which is a cool, like Batman-esque show. But she is the niece of Peggy Carter, and right. to have her basically become the overall big bad of the season just feels like shitting on the legacy of the woman who basically created S.H.I.E.L.D. You know, it's like, well, why would you do this?
I mean, Devendra, if you got rejected by Chris Evans for your aunt, right?
Yeah.
Is that what it is?
I forget. Yeah.
Then you would probably break bad too, is what I'm saying. She's played by Emily Van Camp, by the way.
Emily Van Camp. There you go.
Who deserves so much more than this show gives her.
She does. She's pretty great. I liked her. Also, these guys are absolute idiots because they walk into her apartment and it looks like a supervillain's lair. And they're like, I wonder who the power broker is.
Huh. Well, yeah. When they get to like who the power, they're like revealing who the power broker is. It's like, well, it better be Sharon Carter because there's no other
there's
characters
nobody
it
else.
Could be.
Right.
So if it's not, then it's going to be some completely out of nowhere person. That's the problem. You know, one of the problems of the show. Sorry, Danish. I haven't even heard the rest of your opinion. Yet, so feel free to.
Yeah, I think that it's very messy. I do like a lot of the ideas, like Devendra was saying, just setting up. I think one of the things. I think maybe the first episode, second episode. Falcon at the trying to get a bank loan. I remember you were like shitting mm-hmm, on. Mm-hmm. I was like, what are you talking? This is actually great. Like, I've never seen this in a Marvel movie. Like, yes, it's like kind of a cliche scene, but like, I think it elevated by who is in the scene. It is Falcon of the Avengers going through this. I think that actually has a lot of weight to it. So there's stuff like that I think is really good. But yeah, it's just messy. You could strip out like a half of the show and probably be a good show.
Yeah.
So basically ultimately, turn into a movie and not a series. Yeah.
Ultimately, I think the show just tries to do too much is really the problem with it. And there's just simply not enough time to accomplish everything. But what is accomplished does not inspire confidence that if they had given them 6 more hours, they would have made good use of it, in my opinion.
And now these folks are behind the next Captain America movie.
Yeah. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, they announced it right after the finale.
This is the sadness of this show, is that the concept of Sam coming to terms with what it is like to be a Black Captain America, that is a really interesting idea. Mm-hmm. And all the stuff with Isaiah Bradley, right? Is that what his name is? Yeah. The guy that Carl Lumley played? Yeah. That stuff is like the most compelling. And Carl Lumley does an amazing job, and this is
such a ringer, by the way. Like, you bring in Carl Lumley, you want to cry,
yeah,
you want to feel some emotion,
yeah, knock it out of the park, Carl Lumley, yeah. Right, exactly. And this idea of the U.S. military as discarding the people that it uses is pretty compelling. For you know, there's this meme that went around, right, during WandaVision. People were they're screenshotting this scene from WandaVision. It's like Vision saying the words, "What is grief if not love persevering?" Mm-hmm. And then somebody tweeted the words along with that image. They said, the sound you just heard is every screenwriter in Hollywood saying "fuck" under their breath, right? Because of how genius that line is. And then you know, whether or not you think that line is genius, somebody tweeted that same scene, and they said, "What is Marvel if not military propaganda?" Right, they just tweeted an image, and a lot of Marvel is military propaganda. It's made with the permission of the military. It's made using military resources, and they generally don't do that stuff unless they think they can benefit from it. But this is the one franchise that I think has dared really openly question how the military treats the people that go through the system, and how it treats Black people that go through the system, mm-hmm. and that idea deserved a better show than this, because what we ended up getting was just a bunch of completely meaningless and or poorly thought out and executed material. You guys have already brought up Carly Morgenthau and Joel Walker, and I think so Carly Morgenthau, she looks like she's like 20 years old in this, right? And it's like, okay, well, that's interesting. That's interesting that you'd have such a young person heading up this huge organization. Surely we're going to get some indication as to why they would, like, all these people would follow her. And the show literally spends more time showing people questioning her abilities than it does showing us why we people would follow her in the first place. John Walker, what is even going on with that character? Like, what are we supposed to think about John Walker at the end of the show?
Yeah, he starts out being, like, kind of sympathetic, right? You want
Yes.
We get his background. We see his wife or girlfriend. He has a best friend. Like, he seems like a good guy.
He's like a company, and he's a company man. He's a company, man, you know, a military dude. He's not... to the extent that he's evil, it's that he's part of a system that's evil. It's not like he is bad, right? Then he murders a dude, as you do.
It really escalates very quickly for him.
He may have committed some light war crimes, as they might say in Arrested Development. But then two episodes later, it's all good. You know what I mean? Like,
I would say that aside from the ending, which I agree with, it doesn't make sense. But I kind of like the general arc. I think that's the problem with the show is that if you kind of like on paper, a lot of this stuff is good ideas and a good arc. Like for him, it's a sympathetic character who was thrust in this like really weighty position and he struggles with it. And then he does what he thinks he should do, takes the serum, which changes his mind, like brain chemistry or whatever.
That's true. Yeah.
And then he does this thing. But I think it's almost redeemed by that scene where he is sort of like court-martialed or whatever, when essentially he's saying, "You made me," you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that's a good idea for an arc. It's like they made this weapon, they unleashed it, and now that it's inconvenient for them, they'll just, you know, flush it away. And so, again, it's a good idea. It didn't quite save it, and also just like the ending of the final episode of like, well, that I don't understand what you're saying now. I think there's something good there. There is
the core of a good idea, both for that character and Sharon Carter, right? Because the parallel between John Walker and Sharon Carter is these are both people that the system has used up and spit out, right? Yeah. That's kind of what is behind those ideas. The execution, absolutely piss poor, right? You want to feel that these people's lives are tragic, right? It's like, oh my, it's such a, I can't believe the government would treat them that way. But by the end, you feel nothing, because not only are you like confused about what's even actually supposed to be happening, but it's like the execution of that plot line is very difficult to do well, and I don't think they did a good job, unfortunately.
They wanted it both ways, like, because we haven't talked about Julie Louis-Dreyfus, which I was awesome. It was just so great to see her. But like, that was a setup for that character joining her, what is it called? The Thunderbolts or whatever, the Anti-Avengers. It's like the dumbest name ever. Actually, it's funny. There's a lot of dumb names in this show, which you kind of give a pass to because it's like, I guess that's from the flags. I don't think they would have come up with Flag Smashers if it wasn't from the comic. But anyway, they set up this stuff and it's like, okay, he's disenfranchised. The government made him. Now they tossed him away. Now he's going to join with her. And that's your new villain. Great. That's clean. Maybe they could have done it better, but it's clean. And then, but yeah, it just muddies everything when he tries to get redeemed at the end. Right.
Right. And it's just like, it reminded me honestly of Batman v Superman when Superman says Martha, and then like Batman has spent 2 hours hating this dude. And then at the end, he's just like, we're buddies now. We're friends now, you know? And it's like, that is a pretty big character turn from like, you did a war crime in public to, hey, let's joke around about Lincoln or whatever. You know what I mean? It's pretty rough. It's pretty rough.
Let's talk about Sam's final speech, by the way, which I felt like was a turd cap on this entire thing.
Well, I think a Slash Filmcast listener, John Hoyer, put it really well when he said that if anything, the Obama years have shown us that making inspiring speeches to senators does absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
Right.
This is a fantasy world.
What is he advocating for in that speech? He's like, well, you shouldn't have called these people terrorists.
He sounds like, oh, we didn't bring this up during the Oscars thing, but he sounds like Tyler Perry. It's like, no hate. Don't hate, you know, don't hate people of color.
Right.
But also do not hate the people killing the people of color. Both ways.
Well, yeah.
Both sides.
Yeah. It really sounded like it just was a very anodyne, not strong opinion on anything. about what should happen next. Like, what we have learned, if anything, over the last decade or so, is that governing, making politics, making difficult decisions, it's all about the details. It's all about the execution. And I'm not saying this show should have been The West Wing or The Wire, but it felt like it kind of wanted to be to some degree. It just wasn't. Yeah, sorry. Go ahead, Danish.
I was just say two things about that. Well, let's say three things. One, it would have been great if he wasn't wearing his head thing, which looks stupid.
The worst costume. It looked a little goofy.
I could maybe give a pass to the suit, but not the head thing. I do think that Anthony Mackie actually did a really great job. I think his performance was actually pretty good, trying to sell those lines and ideas. I think what they were trying to get at, though, because they don't have an answer. Like, nobody has an answer to how to fix this. But and he kind of portrayed that. But what he did try to say was, it's complicated, and you shouldn't be the ones to decide things. Things are not black and white. You know, a room full of white guys shouldn't decide policies that affect everybody. Like, I think that's the gist of it. So yeah, it's wishy-washy, but you know, I was a little bit more soft on it than you
guys
were.
That's Marvel taking a stand, basically. That's just what it felt like to me, because it didn't really. He came through so much, right? Like, he saw what they did to Isaiah Bradley, and that is all news to him. To not be more forceful about it, I don't know. It just felt, after all of this, it just felt like, dude, what are you doing? And that, you're literally wearing the flag with the, not sure where that costume came from, but
Wakanda, right?
Did it? Oh yeah, it was Wakanda. But I would say by far the worst of the MCU costumes, even worse than the Captain America costume in the first Avengers movie. Like, it is unsightly.
Well, I think that's pretty subjective, but you know, I think it's a fair point of view. I don't necessarily disagree.
Does he need
completely.
Open ears? He needs a headband and the open.
He probably could use a helmet. You know,
could use a helmet.
Given that he's
cool,
not a super.
Everybody looks cool in a helmet.
Right.
I mean, even Cap has ears sticking out of his helmet, which I don't love.
Yeah,
there's some genuinely bizarre decisions in this finale episode. Example: the final scene between Bucky and Mr. Nakajima. This is very similar to a scene in The Bourne Supremacy.
Yes.
So, spoilers for The Bourne Supremacy, but in The Bourne Supremacy, like, he spends the whole movie trying to find a woman whose parents he murdered in order to tell her the truth that, hey, he executed it. He executed this murder. It wasn't her mom killing her dad and then killing herself. Like, he wanted this girl to know that it was him that did the murder.
Yeah,
and
my bad.
He says this line, it changes things, doesn't it? That knowledge. And it's actually like a very profound moment. And I really like that movie. This is basically the same thing, except immediately after he reveals the information, cut away.
Yeah.
Cut away. We don't need to sit there and dwell on that.
Just sit with that knowledge, and I'm going to go. I'm just going to take a step.
That's another thing where in the first episode, when they set up that plot line, I know you were pretty down on it, and I thought, it's cliched. We've seen it before, but I really think that, again, the fact that it's Marvel.
Surely they're going to stick the landing on this one, right?
Well, no, it's just that the fact that it's Marvel, the fact that it's actually Winter Soldier saying that and doing that has some weight to it. But I agree. It amounted to nothing.
I would love to know, like, what the guy's response would have been. Like, either curse him out or say, I forgive you, or something.
Yes, something. What is his reaction? The whole season has been building up to this moment.
Yeah.
What is his reaction going to be? Oh, it's just,
and now Winter Soldier's like, I can't go to that sushi bar anymore. Oh, well, it's going to be awkward.
Dave, this is a really deep cut. But do you remember a long time ago, Stephen Tobolowsky reviewed Solitary Man, the Michael Douglas movie,
on this podcast.
And the ending of that is ambiguous. And he made this point about how ambiguous endings are fine, but if your question is what a character is going to do, that is a cop out. And so I was reminded of that. With this. You didn't think of it. You didn't think of what he should do, and so you cut away.
and then the movie ends with you know, they're like, hey, by the way, it's Captain America and the Winter Soldier now, and it's like, is he still the Winter Soldier though? Like, Captain America got the new name. Winter Soldier, though, I mean, fuck look, that guy.
I'll say, just on a surface level, I like it when shows do that. Like, what do you call it? Devs, you know? Where it's like, like, you know, I like that. I like that. So I give it a pass. I thought that was cool.
Well, no, I'm not objecting to changing the title. I'm saying, like, why leave the Winter Soldier? Like, he's been on like an arc
the Spring Soldier.
I guess
the Summer Soldier.
I guess if they changed
Bucky
both
would
things,
not have been good.
If they changed both things, if there was like Captain America and Bucky Barnes, like people would have been too confused, right? They've been like, what? Like, I thought I was watching Falcon and Winter Soldier, you know? But as is, it kind of like,
well, I guess the counter argument is that it's called Falcon and Winter Soldier to begin with, but he wasn't the Winter Soldier even at the beginning of the show.
Right. So they fucked it up all the way.
I'm saying they're consistent.
This show was ill-conceived from the start.
Falcon and Bucky.
Okay. Let's talk about some good things about the show. Okay. I do want to mention a couple good things. I think overall the show looked great. Like it was overall like movie level production values for a TV show. And I think that people who work below the line, like all the people who worked in the cast and crew, like did a great job. They did as good of a job as they could selling what was there on the page. And as you pointed out, I don't remember which one of you said, but like it's very likely COVID interfered with what they were attempting to do. You know, maybe
I think they talked about some of that. Yeah.
Right. Maybe there's a whole subplot with Donya Madani or whatever they wanted to shoot and like they didn't get to it. Or maybe there was more about Carla Moore and they just
Madripoor felt like what? Yeah, this is supposed to be like a seedy place in Southeast Asia that has a lot of cool tech and criminals and stuff.
But very few Asians.
Nothing.
Let's not put many Asians. I think there's dude in the background at the bar.
It has a nightclub and some alleys, and that's
heavily Asia inspired, but no Asians in it, or very few of them. So you know, that's cool.
So it goes.
and some baffling decisions at the end of this movie too, like. At the end of the show, too, I was just talking about how weird all these things that happened at the end. But then also, like, Zemo's butler blows up some flag smashers, right? And then we find out, like, guess what? Zemo's still orchestrating things from jail, which, by the way, is the jail that they put people in at the end of Captain America's...
there from the start?
Civil War, right? But it's like... What about the whole Wakanda, Dora Milaje and everything? Like, were they just like, hey, we punished him for a little bit, now we can drop him off at the other place?
Yeah. But it's also like, if you got Zemo, you got this guy who caused so much shit, why is he in anything but the damn middle of the ocean jail?
Well, and also, why is he allowed to still call in executions from there?
That's funny.
Feels like he might want to take away his phone and his iPhone, you know, his radio or whatever the hell.
Go ahead. I was going to move on to
some other things. Some of the action scenes are pretty cool. You know, like I would say the fight scene with Bucky, Falcon, and John Walker was pretty cool. It lacked motivation that I bought. Like, he's like, we got to take away the shield from you. It's like, why?
Yeah.
Why? Like, he's going to be deadly without the shield because he's a super soldier anyway. He could grab a knife and kill like 50 people with it. You know, like, it doesn't matter if he has a shield or not. But that was a really cool fight, I would say. And there
I love the way he uses the wings. Like, it's so cool. Like, because if you kind of boil it down, like, he's basically another Iron Man, you know, except he has wings. But they really sell that, like, no, this is not Iron Man. Like, he moves differently. He has different, you know, things. So that's kind of hard to do. And I think they did a pretty good job with that.
Yeah, I agree. It's pretty cool. I feel bad for all the humans on the Avengers team, right? Like, at least he's not Hawkeye. He's got more than arrows.
He can shoot arrows good, you know?
He can shoot arrows good. At least he's not Black Widow, who can shoot two guns good again. I don't know what's going on there.
There were some good fight scenes. I agree with you. The whole Zemo stuff, I'm trying to figure out, like, what was Zemo's impact on the outcome of the plot?
Yeah.
Like, did Zemo need to be in this at all?
They needed him for the intel for to find the serum. Origin and stuff.
But they could have done that a different way.
They could have done it without
breaking him out. Tell
us everything you know.
Or they could have done it with, like, hey, we have a computer hacker who, like, hacked into Carly's phone or what, you know, like, they could have done it a different way. They decided to bring back Zemo because for I think basically fan service. And it's like, I'm left with very little impression other than the fact that they completely retcon that character from the movie, right? Like, he's like a happy-go-lucky guy in the show. In the movie, he was basically suicidal, as I recall.
Yeah,
right?
just a man based on revenge. Was he also like a super wealthy guy at the beginning?
Not evidenced in the movie. It's not 100% inconsistent. Like, it's conceivable he could have been, but you don't get a taste of that in the movies. So
that's one thing I think people complain about that. I actually thought, oh, that's fun. He's a millionaire.
Yeah. He's James Bond now.
Yeah, basically. Sure. Why not?
Yeah, sure.
They basically Jason Statham'd him from the Fast and Furious franchise, where like Jason Statham like killed Han and kills people.
But they're all buddies now.
So yeah. I agree that the Zemo stuff was like doesn't make sense. It's kind of stupid, but I don't care. I liked it. I thought it was fun. It was fun seeing Daniel Brühl hanging out. Like,
Give me more of Daniel Brühl. Like, I love the guy. It's just,
stupid. It didn't make sense. I didn't hate it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But yeah, I think overall the show has some great ideas and just didn't have the execution. Like, the idea of what does a black Captain America mean? Like, that, that is a fascinating idea of like, and the movie even does a pretty good job of stating, like, giving the problem statement, right? There's all this history of oppression and violence against black people that this country's inflicted. What does it mean to take up that mantle? And does the show does absolutely nothing to answer that question, as far as I can tell, like, or very little, insufficient to answer that question, which is a shame. And then at the end of Endgame, you saw Steve Rogers give the shield to Falcon, and he's like, you're Captain America now. And if you just never watch the show, then in the next movie he's going to be Captain America, right? And you'd be like,
the
show added virtually nothing to the canon, right?
It's a hero. It's the hero's journey, reject the call thing, but it's a whole show of reject the call, which I don't know. I think conceptually I don't have a huge problem with that.
Right. I agree.
If it was tighter, it did feel like we got a little like several cookouts. At the
love the cookouts.
Love the cookouts.
Big fan of the cookouts.
Hanging out with Bucky. Like, it's a great lot of hanging out with Bucky and the fam. We didn't need multiples of those. I just feel like you could tell it's sort of like somebody who's like you're writing a very long essay and you could tell where they just like get really tired of it, or something happened and they had to like rewrite like a certain bit. Like this fact is not true anymore. So the core of my argument is gone. I can't do this anymore.
I like the way they adopted Bucky, Riggs is adopted by the Murtaughs in Lethal Weapon.
That was nice. Mm-hmm. That was nice. So but I think the thing that's so weird about this show is it does so much to convince you that Sam's family is poor, you know? And it's like, there's people literally, there's literally thousands of people in the world right now who are able to make a lot of money because they look handsome. Like, that is the only thing that they do. Like, on Instagram, right? Like, that's the whole thing. I'm not looking down on that, by the way. I wish I could do that. I'm just saying that Sam/Falcon would have, like, 5 million followers on Instagram minimum. And you could very easily turn that into an influencing career, is all
you could. There's so many things you could do. This guy needs like a business manager. He just needs a friend who understands technology.
Yes, 100%.
Have you heard some NFTs? Like
maybe he's anti smartphones. You know.
Yeah.
But the thing is, everyone in the Avengers, if this was real, would be mega famous and like not have any money problems, in my opinion, unless they made terrible decisions.
Do you think? I guess it's a character. Like, would they sell out? I think maybe you could argue that they are, above that. They don't want to take, dirty money.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, I guess. Also, like, why didn't Tony Stark leave these people any cash? Like
anything. Literally, there are many questions. Like, we could avoid a lot of issues in heartache.
Yeah, there was this great McSweeney's article called The Falcon's GoFundMe Page.
yes, I saw.
That's good.
And
the U.S. government is just like, hey, here's a couple bucks for saving the world. would be nice.
Here's from this McSweeney's article. Any funds raised will also benefit my best friend's other best friend, You may know him as Bucky Barnes, formerly known as the Winter Soldier, who is currently paying out of pocket for therapy and lots of it. He's glad to have his mind back after spending decades brainwashed, but the biggest adjustment for him has been navigating medical expenses. Even Hydra had healthcare. On a somber note, we're all sad Tony's gone, despite him denying his employees a basic living wage.
Yeah, very good. Very good. Very good.
I mean, yeah. It's kind of like the classic Breaking Bad couldn't have happened in Canada sort of thing.
I also feel like Winter Soldier, Bucky, somebody's given Bucky money. Bucky doesn't have that apartment. And what's he paying out of pocket with? Like, he has money from somewhere.
Well, he is sleeping on the floor, you know, so
by choice, he's a very nice apartment
or not by choice because of the PTSD, as you say.
Yeah.
But yeah, I see what you're saying. So anyway, well, show had a lot of potential, didn't quite live up to it. And it's a little bit of a bummer. But there were some good qualities to it. There were some great fight scenes. Everyone who worked on the show, separate from the storytelling, I thought did a great job.
I want to call out Wyatt Russell one more time. Like the, I think he handled it really well. The scene where he's debating on taking the serum or not. Like there was a one moment where he gets his ass kicked by the Wakandans, and he says like it was a great line delivery of like they're not even super soldiers.
They're not even super soldiers.
I thought he's your line delivery was better, but but other than that, like you know, it was really good. I was legitimately thought that was great.
He does really good, like whiny. Like whiny.
I wouldn't call it whiny.
No, it's a lot like in at the end where he's like, oh man, they made me a super soldier. They made me like I got a name, got a new costume, US agent. Cool. How cool is that? He kind of teeters between like, you know, puppy dog, like, I don't know. There's like a vulnerability to him that I think was cool that the show never really used very well, certainly not when he went evil. Yeah.
I think that one of the most interesting, I mean, I feel like people read a lot of things into the show that weren't there. But, you know, you can have a charitable reading of the show, and that's cool. One of the more interesting readings of that line was it's like John Walker is kind of like white privilege personified.
Yeah.
So that was interesting. Like this idea of like these black women come and just by sheer dint of their skill and hard work, they are able to completely humiliate him. And he's just like in complete disbelief. Like, he's like, I can't even believe that happened. How could that possibly happen?
I don't think that's reading too much into it. I think that's pretty good.
Yeah. It's like, they must have taken something from me. I must feel grievance here. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you're right. Like, I guess that would be theoretically subtext, Danish, but I guess I just feel like I don't feel like when I'm watching The Wire, I'm like, you could read this scene 15 different ways and maybe 12 of them were intended, you know? And I just don't have that kind of confidence in the people that made this show, you know?
Yep.
So anyway, all right. Those are our thoughts on Falcon and Winter Soldier season one. If you have thoughts on why we're wrong, please keep them to yourself. No, I'm just joking. You can always email us at slashfilmcast@gmail.com or of course, comment on this post over at patreon.com/filmpodcast.
Also comment on Dave's YouTube reviews.
Smash that subscribe button. Smash that like button. I mean, as I said on a recent episode of /Homecast, I should have recapped Invincible instead.
I think we would have more fun. Smash that subscribe button like John Walker. Smash that shield, baby.
Nailed it. Okay, yeah. Danish Syed, thanks so much for sticking around. This is a lot of fun.
Thank you, Danish.
Yeah, this is awesome. Thanks for having
me. Where can people find your work, Danish?
You can follow me on Twitter @_DanishSyed. That's pretty much a good place for it. Yeah.
All right. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week for the Mitchells versus the Machines on the Slash Filmcast.